Stefan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Patrick. Really looking forward to it.
Yeah, for sure. I've been following yourself and Dream Day for some time. So interesting story. My journey with Dream Day actually started when I first started working at Client Boost. So within my first week, I think Jonathan had just got a subscription to Dream Data and we'd started using it as part of the sales and marketing team. And I can't remember who it was from Dream Data that we were working with, but they showed us how to use the Reveal tool. And yeah. So the Reveal tool basically lets you understand, you know, who's engaging with your LinkedIn profiles, who's engaging with your website, et cetera. And we were using that exclusively to power cold outreach at that time. So it was a very, very manual process, which seems wild right now with everything that's been so AI powered. But yeah, it was super cool. And we obviously used Dream Data for many more different things at this stage. But yeah, it was for me, as soon as I got stuck into the platform, I saw the potential of it immediately and was like immediately like a number one fan trying to get everybody to use Dream Data. Because I just feel like I've worked in the agency space for so long. And it seems like a joke at this stage that marketers are dealing with this like proof that marketing works. And I was like, finally, here's the tool that you can use to actually prove that marketing works, right?
Got the right ingredients for revenue growth. A pinch of effort and a dash of hope won't cut it anymore. Grab your utensils. You're about to get some high-performing marketing recipes. Welcome to Client Boost Kitchen.
I'm really glad you say so, Patrick, because I think that like when I decided to kind of co-found Dream Data together with my two co-founders, Lars and Ole, that was kind of my reason for daring to start the company was also that I know this is a super real problem for B2B marketers, like what works, what doesn't work, where does customers come from? So I felt like I saw a very ugly prototype from Lars and Ole, but if they can get this to work, I know there's marketers out there that is feeling this pain every single day. And that was kind of just the basic notion that was enough for me to kind of, okay, let's try it out.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like that's also like we could go on a huge tangent here about, I have this really strong POV that is more marketers and more entrepreneurs should, you know, pull ideas from the market as opposed to trying to push them on. And that feels like really classic example of pulling a problem from the market and trying to solve it, knowing it's such a painful problem, as opposed to thinking you have a solution and trying to push it onto people.
I think that's very true. I think those companies that start with, of course, there's 100 different ways to succeed, but we have the advantage that I'm kind of like also the ICP of our own product. So in many cases, I have a good feeling whether have we described this new feature well enough? Will the people get it? Is this an actual pain that we should solve, or is there other pains that are more worth solving? Of course, my opinion is just my opinion, and oftentimes you need more data to back up decisions, but having an insider from whatever industry or category or niche that you start up company within definitely gives you an edge.
For sure. I was talking to Adam Holmgren from Fibler recently, and we were kind of riffing on
that's
that
a good
same
example,
subject of
yeah.
Of being in this perfect position where you yourself, because I'm fortunate in that position as well, where I'm head of marketing for a marketing company. And so to some degree, I understand the problems my market is having too. And I feel like that puts you in such a strong position to actually, you know, from a content ideation standpoint, and probably even for you, feature development too.
Yeah, even when was that? Like 2012, I was part of the first people hired from for Elance, which is now Upwork, the world's biggest freelancer platform. I was hired because I was a super user of the platform.
Yeah.
And it was so easy to convince other people to use the platforms because I had been using the platform a lot and I knew the benefits and I knew what not to do there. So I get it. Like it's a fairly good career advice to pick companies to work for where you have either used the product or really know the pains that they're addressing.
Yeah, for sure. I've seen, and this is like, I will get onto like the meat of the topics in a moment, but this is such a big problem I've seen marketing teams struggle with historically as well, is they understand marketing very, very well. So they understand like the channels that they need to be on, how to optimize them, et cetera. But like really deeply understanding how to position stuff in a way that like deeply resonates with the audience is very, very difficult to do. And I've seen projects in the past where I've, as a marketer, looked at something that maybe a subject matter expert that's not got marketing expertise has recommended as a way of positioning something and thought, that's never going to work. It doesn't feel like it reads right. But then you put it in front of the audience, and because they understand how that audience communicates, actually ends up performing really, really well. So with that, let's get into some of the meat of the topics. So the first, I feel like I'm hitting you with so many hard questions today. I apologize, but I feel like people get a lot of value over understanding this. So let's start with the kind of problem that you're solving. So why do you think it is that marketers are struggling so much to prove ROI at the moment?
I don't think it's at the moment. I think it's been the curse of B2B marketing in the whole eternity of B2B marketing. I think we can start with some basic context. So if you draw a line of a customer journey, the last mile, that's for B2B companies that sells a certain deal size, that's always sales. So sales, when they sign a contract, they can go share the contract inside of the company, say, hey, we got this contract signed. However, the marketing touches, they are predominantly earlier in the journey. So just that simple fact makes it harder for us marketers to show our worth. Then if you then layer on multiple things, like this thing that runs the whole sales org is a CRM system. And the CRM systems have this incredibly dumb field called original source that looks at the last session before a demo call or a free sign up that took place. And that is typically the outcome of 5 to 10 sessions. It's the result of those 5 to 10 sessions. And if you inspect what took place in those 5 to 10 sessions before somebody came in directly to the website and converted to a demo call, direct is never direct. It always stems from some sort of activity. But the world or the GTM systems today are still being steered by the original source field, which is incredibly flawed and is incredibly against understanding what are actually truly the things that are happening on this customer journey, and not just logging the last session in which the conversion happened. And you can go on, you can say Google Analytics have absolutely no clue about what's going on in B2B. The ad platforms, they are really good at explaining you on platform metrics, like clicks on the ad, engagement with the ad. But the problem in B2B, you notice very well, Patrick, is that it's going to be 6 months, 12 months, before you see any money coming out of those ads. So all these very big things where marketers spend a lot of time, CRM systems, ad platforms, Google Analytics, all of them are completely flawed against what B2B marketing really is about.
Yeah, I would agree. And it's kind of funny. You mentioned Google Analytics there. And I was actually thinking today, ahead of this call, I was like, wow, I actually spend zero time in Google Analytics anymore. I used to spend, at the beginning of my career, I would be in Google Analytics every single day. Now I spend zero time there and actually spend way more time in platforms like Dreamdata, for example. And I'll give a kind of classic example, which I think summarizes what you're talking about there, which is we had, I was just doing some kind of like inbound deal research recently. Original source on HubSpot was like the longest tail blog URL you've ever seen, and it said direct traffic. Yeah. I'm like, okay, so this person just remembered like an 18 words string of words, typed it into the address bar. And then when I went into Dreamdata, it was one of the most complex buyer journeys I've ever seen in my life. So the deal started 18 months ago. It was originally a different point of contact, and so the point of contact was a previous VP of marketing who had since been fired. The CFO had been so impressed with us, they then waited 12 months after hiring somebody new, told this new person that, you know, they'd spoken to Client Boost a while back. This person had obviously done some research with an ad blocker or a cookie blocker or something like that, because we couldn't see any of her interactions, and then had come in direct via the website. And I was like, people think that the last touch is the most important. But when you actually kind of like are able to flip the hood, you realize marketing is a million times more complicated than you thought it was.
Yeah. So I think we've gotten the point across that like B2B marketing can be complex because of the nature of it. It's very long journeys. There's many people involved in the deals. There's tech stacks with 5 to 10 tools involved. There's marketing, mm-hmm. there's sales, there's product, there's CS and so forth.
Yeah, exactly. And so I would say one of the ways that, at least in my understanding, that DreamData is trying to solve for this issue is with data-driven attribution over a much longer time horizon, right? And so could you explain how that works and also how it helps in terms of being able to give more clarity over not just, you know, what the different touch points are, but which of those touch points is also having more influence than others potentially?
It's not the easiest answer, but I'll give it a try. So I think the first thing we want to do in DreamData is that we're not in the business of guessing. So mm-hmm. It's not like we're not doing attribution based on gut feeling. We run on data. So what DreamData does is that it hooks into all the tools that a company has available that has anything related to customer journeys. So that's typically a CRM system, marketing automation, website, ad platforms, review platforms, outreach tools, etc. So we collect all the data from all these silos and then put it inside the DreamData data warehouse to kind of establish this in popular tone, like a one shared truth, where we have mm-hmm. all the touches you have on an account available. And because we integrate with the CRM system as well, we also know which of these accounts did you win. And now that we have all the touches available on any given account anywhere, we also know how does the journeys look like of those accounts that you won or those accounts that reached your sales pipeline. The data-driven model that we offer is, I think nowadays you would call it an AI model, but in reality, mm-hmm. more like machine learning that does, I think they call it removal calculation. So let's say a journey has 100 touches and then it tries to remove one touch and then calculate what is the likelihood of this journey actually being won if I remove this touch. And it does that across all the deals that you have won to kind of compare what are the touches we know of. If we remove them from the journeys, what is the likelihood of you winning? So at least from a math perspective, it does the best possible answer of which of these touches that you have are the most impactful. What we've then built is that this ability to jump in your kind of pipeline or your sales funnel. So you can say, I want to inspect what matters when they get to new business one. I want to inspect what's in a sales opportunity or just an MQL. So this allows you to basically dissect, say, for the MQLs you have. So if an MQL and on average have 20 sessions touches involved, then it will tell you, you might have 20 sessions and then a linear attribution model would assign equal value to all of them. The data-driven model will arrive at an answer that says this particular or these particular touches are the ones that actually truly matters if you run this longer machine learning math on top of these journeys. So it's a long answer saying that we analyze all customer journeys and we try to see which of those touches are the most important.
Yeah. Okay. So I feel like I have, because I've been trying to wrap my head around exactly how to explain this. And I feel like expectedly you did a much better job than I think I ever could do that. So I appreciate that.
I'm sure if you ask one of our data scientists, they will give you an even more advanced question. So I'm trying to simplify a little bit.
Yeah. So let me see if I can kind of summarize a little bit. So the concept here is you're analyzing the full buyer journey in context of other buyer journeys. And then it's using kind of machine learning / AI to kind of predict, well, based on other journeys, we think there's a high probability that this touch point had a bigger influence on the deal than this other one, because we know that when we kind of remove this touch point from other journeys, it has a lower likelihood to close, for example.
Something like that.
Cool. So that's a super helpful tool, I think, to have in your arsenal. And I think I would say it's something that I use pretty much on a weekly basis to at least directionally improve or move the way that we're approaching marketing at Client Boost. But I would love to come to a kind of practical application of how marketers could actually use this to kind of solve for that problem of proving ROI to you know, maybe it's the CEO, maybe it's the CFO, sometimes even head of marketing kind of reporting upwards to the CMO. And so let's take this hypothetical scenario. So let's say I was a head of marketing, 20 million ARR B2B SaaS company, and I've got the CEO kind of barking at me, okay, we're spending 50K a month on LinkedIn ads. Where's the ROI? How do you think we should actually measure that marketing performance?
So there's a couple of ways that you can do it. I guess the conversation here is how we would do that dream data, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So a dream data allows you to isolate the clients that you have won for a certain period. So let's just say now this is Q2. So we can isolate the deals that has been won in Q2. And if I don't then wanted to kind of be focusing on defending my LinkedIn budget, then I would be selecting out of the 100 deals we won in Q2, how many of these accounts did LinkedIn touch? That could be one way of that. That's called influenced. So LinkedIn, let's say that wouldn't be completely unusual that LinkedIn influenced 50 of those or something like that. So that's one way to give a qualitative answer. Out of the deals we won, LinkedIn touched 50 of them. You could also go the cherry picking route and find, go and look for the 5-10 deals that you're most proud of this quarter. And then you can open them up individually in LinkedIn, as we talked about, where you'd be able to see, or in Dream Data, sorry, where you can see all the touches on these journeys. And if you run LinkedIn ads, we have a partnership with LinkedIn where their API tells us every time an account has had more than 3 impressions. So you'll start seeing all these LinkedIn impressions popping up on the accounts simultaneously as the sales team does their work. Another scenario that you'd quite typically see is also that when you have like somebody coming directly to the website, maybe there's months of LinkedIn ads going out to these accounts before that. And those kind of customer journey maps have a very, you know, very simplistic explanation to put in front of the CEO or the sales leader saying that, look, it's great that you had this meeting and this call, et cetera. I can see them here on my map. I just want to show you that before that happened, we also had all these, all this coverage from LinkedIn ads. And what do you think about that? Should we be doing more or less of this? So that's kind of two approaches. One is kind of the like quantitative way, just pull out all the deals. How many of them did we touch? The other way is to cherry pick a few deals to tell kind of a story that kind of clearly says, yeah, LinkedIn came before the sales team's work. And then you can go into, you know, we have the LinkedIn ads report as well, where you can go into a more return on ad spend focus, where you try to kind of calculate the math of how much did we spend, how much revenue did we get back from it, and so forth. But that's probably more marketer to marketer, you'll do that math rather than tell your boss about it.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I love all those. And I think, you know, the interesting thing for me there was how you kind of extracted this idea of, you know, cherry picking a couple of deals and telling a narrative around it. And I feel like, you know, as marketers, I think we all intuitively kind of know that storytelling is really important, but we kind of forget to do it at the executive level. And I've often found that sometimes a good anecdote, like the one that you just mentioned there, can actually go way further in proving a point than sometimes just, you know, showing a bunch of numbers to an exec board.
I think that it's a bit like what we talked about before, about being a user or something, but it's like just being able to something that has some kind of emotional, no discussion kind of feel to it. I think that, you know, it goes a long way sometimes.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And I would say, I just wanted to kind of like double down on that idea of using the ROAS feature in Dream Data. So it's interesting for me. I found that that's particularly useful, again, the CFO in particular on board. Yeah. So when we can say, okay, because I think that's another good thing that you can do with DreamDay is you can understand, okay, what's the average ramp time for different channels? What's the expected ROAS? So you can say, okay, based on historic data, we expect that if we invest 10K in this channel, we should get, I don't know, like 30K back, or we should get 300K back or something like that. And based on historic performance, we know that, you know, once we've made that investment, it should take 90 days or it should take 180 days. And when you have that kind of certainty, getting budget signed off can be much, much easier and less painful.
That's good. It's good you think, good that you remind me of some of the like features we built a long time ago that is still very, very valid. Yeah. So per every channel we have, like digital channel, you'll be able to, we pull in the ad spend on an account level, but also by campaign or even by keyword if we're talking Google search, and we can see what comes out on the other side. And those are kind of math equations that the financial people get.
Yeah, for sure. So I feel like we've kind of covered the reporting measurement topic in detail there, and have lots of like interesting ways that marketers can maybe reapproach reporting. One thing I wanted to talk about, which is it's kind of going on a huge tangent here, but it's just for me personally, and this is coming to like one of the reasons that I decided to do the Client Boost Kitchen in the first place, was to share recipes based on stuff that we're actually doing, as opposed to just, you know, generic advice. And so one thing that I find myself using DreamDay a lot for is the audiences tool. Like the audiences tool is, I've found to be incredible. So it pretty much powers our entire retargeting audiences at this point. And we're also starting to integrate more of the AI signals. And so one thing I wanted to talk to you about was different ways in which B2B marketers could leverage DreamData's audiences and AI signals, and just signals in general, tools to potentially, like, let's say pipelines down quarter v quarter. What's, you know, how could they use those to kind of improve performance there? Because I think that's just been a really powerful tool for us.
I'm really glad to hear so, Patrick. So if we start with the signals and then we can talk audiences afterwards. So what's special about DreamData's signals or AI signals is that it utilizes all your go-to-market data. Before we started recording, we talked a little bit about G2. And it's true, G2 is some sort of an intent signal, but so is it a visit to a website or an engagement with a LinkedIn ad, or somebody checking out your documentation or your legal pages or something like that. DreamData has all that data inside the data warehouse. So we're not recommending stuff based on one silo. We have all the go-to-market data. And that's what makes the signals that we're able to produce special, because we have the business result you want, new business or sales opportunities, and we have all the data that is available about these things. So the things that we identify with AI is stuff that is not a generic recommendation. It's a recommendation based on your customer journeys. And you might see stuff popping up that has very low volume, like people visiting your community page or people checking out your trust center, because that's what matters in your unique case. And this is basically what our AI there helps surface. And why you don't want signals? That's the next question. You want them because you want to be spending your go-to-market people's time as effectively as you can. It's, you know, maybe it's us in marketing who needs to increase ad pressure on some accounts because they look like they're heating up, or maybe they are even heated up and you actually, now it's time the sales team needs to kind of do the outreach. So these AI signals basically gives you accounts that are looking like people who are normally buying. And then, you know, it's up to judgment calls and a little bit process for you to decide, do we just need to increase marketing pressure, or do we need to recommend a salesperson that needs to to start the engagement?
Yeah, for sure. And I would even kind of add to that, something I've found interesting about those AI signals specifically is it's also given you like an indication of strength and correlation. So when I flipped the hood on it, I think you did a live webinar on this last week. Yeah, it was last week. And so I went into it following this webinar, and it's like, okay, for us, this was crazy. LinkedIn ad impressions was one of the strongest correlations to pipeline, which I thought was wild, but it does that for loads of other signals. And it will get like really granular as well, where it'll be like, this specific URL page has a weak correlation or a strong correlation or a medium correlation, which I thought that was super cool.
I'm really glad to hear. So it's really nice to see things that were ideas become products that people use afterwards.
Yeah, for sure. And so let's come back. And so I feel like we have a good understanding of the intent signals. And let's move on to the audiences feature as well. And how you can maybe use that within the kind of broader marketing strategy, and even to empower the sales team, because I think anything that helps marketers collaborate with sales better is always going to be a big win.
Yeah. So the overall, if we zoom out a little bit, we're starting now to call ourselves an AI-driven activation and attribution platform. And the reason for that is that we feel like to some degree, we have completed the attribution game. We know what works. But now that we know what works, we need to be utilizing this information where it's needed in other systems, like ad platforms, CRM systems, in audiences, on all these different places. And the audience feature that we have now is that, again, you have all your go-to-market data, and we've made that available with a few clicks, where you can then make a list of either accounts where you've combined many different filters, or contacts that have done many different things. And then we've built direct integrations to, if I can remember it, Google, LinkedIn, Meta, and Bing, which is called Microsoft. So you have all your go-to-market data. You can make whatever audience you'd like, and then you can push these audiences into these ad platforms. So a B2B marketer like yourself is completely empowered to orchestrate all, almost all the ad buying you do on all these platforms. And instead of having to do simplistic choices on the ad platform because you only have a certain slice or a certain silo of the data, when you do it in Dreamdata, you have all the go-to-market data. So you can say it needs to have a G2 touch, but also visited our website. And it needs to be of a certain pipeline stage and a certain size. So you can like continue to put more and more filters on top of it, because you can slice and dice all the go-to-market data before you start running ads on it. Like a simple use case of that is also, why run retargeting on everything when you can actually make a choice of only retargeting your ideal customer profile?
Yeah, that's such a great point to end on, because this is that was a strategic shift that we made on our own LinkedIn ads channel probably about 6 months ago. And so we use Dreamdata in combination with another platform called Primer. And so what we do with Primer is build Primer's like more like a target account list, like job title targeting platform. So it's more for demand generation. And then Dreamdata, we use exclusively to kind of like combine all the intent signals. And so what we do is at the demand generation layer, which is the long-term strategy, we use just Primer. And then for the high intent retargeting, it's Primer. And then it's Dreamdata. And then it also has to match the ICP targeting in Primer. And so what we found is that, like you say, instead of using that generic retargeting audience that we've been using before, which wasn't ineffective, but there was obviously a lot of wasted spend in that, we shrunk the audience right down, like ridiculous. It's about, I think our retargeted audience at the moment of like high intent buyers is like 8,000. And suddenly the cost per acquisition on that retargeting channel is like dropped pretty significantly, to the point where it's, at least on the in-platform level, it looks like cost per close one is like $200, which is insane. That's not what our like overall cost per acquisition is. It's 10 times that.
Yeah.
But it's kind of interesting, because it has also then just at the holistic level brought down the whole customer acquisition cost for us, which is pretty wild. And it's just because of how powerful having like actual intent signals as opposed to kind of guesswork, which I think a lot of other retargeting strategies are.
Yeah, something I've started to do a lot lately has been to control the amount of impressions each account receives as well on LinkedIn, which has been really impactful for us. So, and like a simple example of why this matters, like if you show one person and add 21 times instead of 20 times, it doesn't really make a difference. Yeah. But if you go from 0 to 1, that makes a huge difference. And inside of DreamData, you can, because we get all this data from LinkedIn saying these accounts have received, let's say, 200 impressions, then we can make another audience that says the accounts that have received more than 200 impressions. And then we put the biggest budget on the accounts that go from 0 to 200. And then once you hit that threshold, we'll lower the budget and you'll get less ad pressure because we know we have taken you from 0 to 200.
That's genius, man. I feel like I'm going to go away. I'm going to go away and implement that immediately, or at least run it as a test.
And you can set the time period. So you can say, like, the way we've done it ourselves is the last 30 days, 0 to 200, and then from 200 and above. That really ensures that everybody gets a fair budget distribution rather than a few big accounts sucking up most of the budget, which we've run into as well before.
Yeah, yeah, that's a really good way of doing that I haven't considered before, because we have the same problem. And 9 times out of 10, it's usually like one of the big four, like Apple, Amazon, all those companies sucking up all the budget.
Exactly.
Well, cool, man. We're kind of at the 30-minute mark here, and I feel like that last one especially was such I love it. Like, I feel like we've had tons of really valuable information in the podcast, but I love it when it's this, I don't know, like left field hack that nobody else has maybe thought of. That feels like a genius way to end things today. So I just want to say, appreciate you joining. Love what you guys are doing at DreamData. And maybe we'll have you on again sometime to talk about new strategies in the future too.
I would be happy to join again, Patrick. It felt like the 30 minutes flew by very fast.
Yeah, for sure. Cheers, dude.
Thanks, man.